Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. With us today, we've got Harry Statter. Harry is the founder and CEO of Frontline Wildfire Defense. Harry, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Christian. Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah. So let's start. And I admittedly, as I was sharing with you before we started recording, I'm super excited to dig in. Down the road from us in beautiful Jackson, up the road from you in beautiful Bozeman. And so when I saw that you guys had figured out a novel way to deal with ever-present wildfires, I was like, we need to have Harry on the podcast. So with that, Frontline, floor is yours. Please dial us in. You know, how are you solving a tremendous need?
Yeah, Christian. Bozeman's a great place to live. I've been in Jackson Hole for since New Year's 2000. Really when I first moved to Jackson, I wanted to focus on something that's called landscape ecology. It's a study of how the built environment interfaces with natural process. And I landed in fire management, really giving folks a reason to manage their forests, manage their landscapes to, safely live with fire. Fast forward a number of years, we pivoted off of fuels management. We were doing forestry and landscape ecology work, and I started up Frontline. Frontline is a software-connected external sprinkler system. We provide firefighter-level protection in an automated fashion without the need for boots on the ground. We've got a geospatial software platform that detects and tracks all fires in the U.S. and in Canada. We're agnostic in the data that we plug in. It's everything that from satellite data to weather data to camera data to fire service data. We use that information to activate our external sprinkler network. And when we activate a system on your home, we are proactively wetting down your home and its surroundings so that when embers land on the home, they're in a condition that's too wet to burn. And that, in a nutshell, is what Frontline does.
Let's talk about what inspired you to start the company. You know, I know there's a lot of debate as to what may be the source of changes in climate and whether or not they're more or less severe. But I admit, I feel like I've been reading more about wildfires than I have in the past. What do the numbers say, and how has that influenced you in building this company?
You know, we came at it from a landscape ecology lens initially. Understanding how the built environment interfaces with natural processes sort of core to the foundational elements of Frontline. Wildfire is a part of every plant community across the U.S. 80% of fires in the U.S. are burning in grasslands and shrublands. About 20% are burning in forests. The fire return intervals differ based on if you're in a grassland, it could be, 3 years. If you're in a forest, it could be 80 to 120 years. But nonetheless, the need for fire as an underlying component to restoring those plant communities remains the same, right, across all plant communities in the United States. It's the best way to regenerate the seedbed. It reduces competition, and it also eliminates invasives. Think of it as a way of just, kind of restarting a blank canvas. And from that blank canvas, you have growth. And then when that growth matures, it starts again. As a need, all plant communities need fire. With the increase in climate and really temperatures globally, the onset of fire has increased. So you have longer duration fire seasons. Fire season starts earlier in the year and it lasts longer. A lot of the fires that we've seen in the last couple of years have been either December or January fires. You take LA last January, and that was a January 7th fire. The fire in just outside of Boulder, the Marshall Fire, was a end of December fire. And so fire season lasts about 12 months out of the year. So it's really this combination of botanical need coupled with increasing temperatures.
And you obviously, well, presumably you have some intelligent underwriters sitting at some of the major home insurance companies. And again, anecdotal for me, but I read that they're canceling coverage. Is there anything structural that you see that's here to stay? Or is it more cyclical where they have to, the risk that they cover, they dial it back for whatever the reason?
Yeah, no, I think it's very much a structural consideration moving forward. It's similar to other natural perils, whether it be snow or rain or flood, tornado, wind. There's a way to live and safely live with wildfire. There's a way to safely construct our homes, our businesses, our communities, so that when wildfire occurs, we're resilient. We're able to adapt and live safely with that natural process. I think the insurance market these days is retroactively responding to a situation where we're not currently prepared. Insurers have historically relied on certain public services, namely firefighters, to protect their private policies during a fire. But like we just saw in LA, LA has the highest density of firefighters anywhere on the planet. It was January 7th, 2025. There are no other fires that were competing for firefighter resources. And firefighters saved countless lives during that fire. However, from a private markets perspective, you saw policy after policy burning in neighborhoods in one of the highest density areas of the world, and that's a situation where private markets can't really continue to follow a laissez-faire approach. They need to be smarter. They need to understand the exposure, and then based on that exposure, underwrite intelligently, but also prepare, make sure that their policies that they're writing to are prepared to live with fire safely.
I think it's a great segue into the mechanics, because coincidentally my brother lives across the 405 from the Palisades in Bel Air. I just so happened I was there because we had a layover in LAX on our way down to Mexico and saw what was taking place. Kind of crazy. It was ash everywhere in Westwood. That said, I think I was surprised to find out, like everyone else, that the reservoir up there was empty. And so it would be great then to unpack the system and how you think about, big picture. Did you always know from the get-go that you were gonna build your own, your software package, the company, the system? What are the risks that you normally see? I presume you're connected to a well, or how to ensure that the system is gonna work, knowing that there could be dependencies outside your control. And then I have a bunch more questions, but why don't we start there?
From the standpoint of, did I know that I was going to be running a tech company? No.
Okay.
When I was doing my undergraduate and graduate work in Ann Arbor, Michigan, the focus was applied ecology, landscape ecology, forestry, layering on a landscape architectural design on top of a functional design. So blending form and function with landscapes, designing residential landscapes, commercial landscapes, looking at those landscapes relative to how they blended in with their surroundings. how they facilitated migration, how they facilitated bird habitat, raptor habitat, ungulate habitat, and making them look good. I did not know at the time when I was in grad school at Michigan that I'd be running a tech company. I don't think anyone else in my class ended up running a tech company. I don't know that for a fact, but the after really diving in the field in Jackson Hole, starting in Jackson Hole, and managing forests in Jackson, and then growing that company to run 80, between 80 and 100 people in it, managing forests from Wyoming up to Montana, the Big Sky Zone, Bozeman Zone, all the way down to New Mexico. We were really focused on understanding the ecology. We wanted to simulate a fire, but do so mechanically in areas where there was a reluctance to put fire on the landscape. And so what that means is, you're managing a forest for density, structure, age, type. We're doing a lot of aspen regeneration. We're doing a lot of pine beetle management. Pine beetle is a very natural disturbance in the forest. It's a smokeless fire. It opens up the canopy, brings in more sunlight, more heat to the forest floor, and it's a way to restore the forest.
Is that the reason for the reluctance?
That was the reason that people really started to take notice that there needed to be forest management. Because they started to see their trees dying. Back in the early 2000s, you had large acreages just dying from either pine beetle or spruce beetle or Doug fir beetle epidemics. People wanted to know why. Really, forest is dynamic. All of our plant communities are dynamic. They are not just this picture in time. They're constantly evolving. And there's a lot of interdependency amongst the different species in the plant communities and the fauna that are using those plant communities. But they're in a constant state of evolution. And when you started to see beetle epidemics, that was a very natural way of the forest trying to regenerate and restore itself. So we were at the same time we were doing a lot of work throughout the Western US, we were also studying how fire was igniting structures. Because we started to see where commercial structures like supermarkets in Colorado and supermarkets in California that were surrounded by acres and acres of parking lot were nonetheless burning during fire. And at the time, really the fire service was, the message was around creating defensible space so that firefighters could occupy that defensible space during a fire. And defensible space is, the concept of opening up land around a structure so that it would break, the continuity of a fire, but also allow the firefighters to occupy that space and defend a structure during a wildfire. Well, we are nonetheless seeing, these large commercial structures burning. Then we started to see boats in marinas burning during fire. And these are boats that are sitting on water. So we dug in to better understand what the cause of structure ignition is during a fire. And now it's commonly understood, but back then was not, is it's embers. Embers, just like a small campfire, you'll have embers, coming out of the campfire, and when you apply wind, those embers can go a really long ways. In some cases, they've been tracked up to 26 miles outside of a wildfire perimeter. It really just depends on how hard the wind's blowing. And in the fires that we've seen, these destructive fires, whether it be LA, Lahaina, Santa Rosa, the Tubbs Fire, the Marshall Fire, you've got hurricane force winds that are blowing embers many, many miles, and in some cases simultaneously exposing a million plus structures. So, you have so many structures exposed at the same time that it is impossible for firefighters to be everywhere all at once. And they're really focused on getting you out of harm's way, saving your life, saving your family's life. Well, when you look at it, you've got, a million plus structures simultaneously exposed with no way to defend them. You have this concept of defensible space, which is, it's being contradicted by supermarkets burning. And so you also have this need for natural fire to occur to restore these plant communities. So when you put it all together, it was a situation where, okay, we just needed to figure out how to safely live with fire, right? And that wasn't just a critical need for you as a homeowner, but it was a critical need from an economic perspective for any business, whether it be an insurance business or a mortgage provider, to provide that financial instrument to you. They have to be comfortable as well that their private assets are protected. And looking at it within that lens, we said, okay, let's start with the value at risk first, which is the structure, right? It's the home, it's the business, and work concentrically outwards. And if we could define a way that is effective at protecting a home, a structure from wildfire, then you could have a sound discussion around how to safely live with fire, how to let natural fire regimes go uninterrupted by human management. And so that was really the focus part point. And the only way to really do that is to use technology. It's to develop a solution that blended software with hardware with design, right? So we created this integrated design, this integrated system that included design, software, and hardware. And we built a prescription that is protective for homes and businesses during a fire. What we are doing is we are tracking fire, and it could be anywhere up to 100 miles outside of your home, right? And we will look at the location of that fire relative to the location of your home. We run it through algorithms, and you could activate your system manually through our app. You could track the fire through our app. You could activate the system through a switch on the controller, or you could opt in for automatic activation, where our back end will sense a fire near your home. And if it is a fire that threatens your home or your business, it'll send you a push notification saying in 10 minutes, your system's going to activate. You could choose to accept it. You could decline it. If you are evacuating, it will just run. And when it runs, what it is doing is it is wetting down your home and the materials on and around your home. So from the walls of your home up to 30 feet off the walls of your home. It's called the immediate and the intermediate zones. And some folks refer to the immediate zone as zone zero, right? So you are wetting down patio furniture, front doormats, leaves, needles in the gutter, the vehicle parked in front of your garage, right? So that when embers land on and around your home, they're landing in, essentially fuels that have a high moisture content and it doesn't cause ignition. It's very similar to like a golf course or an irrigated ag land. And you're proactively wetting down these materials before embers land on them. And that solution, allows this integrated approach that can be applied at scale. And so that is, a very simplistic summary to frontline.
And so is the system have a separate storage tank in order to make sure there aren't issues with a pump or local water?
Yeah, we've got two different types of systems. For one, we are a water smart device. So we optimize the amount of water. We use very, very little water during a fire. It takes very little water to avoid a fire. It takes a lot of water to put one out. Some of the saves that we had in LA, we had 59 homes that we protected in LA. We were 96% effective rate in the LA fires. Some of the homes were literally like last house on the street type saves. And Christian, I was actually out there as well during the fire, and staying right along the side of the 405, and spent a lot of time in the fire zone during the fire. Know what it smells like, had the smoke, spent, behind, the lines in the Palisades and Malibu. It was pretty impressive what Frontline did. We tie in to the municipal water stream. So if you're on municipal water, we will tie in a municipal water. If you're on a well, we will tie into the well, right? And then because we are able to optimize the amount of water usage, it draws very little water. A lot of the structures that we protected actually lost water during the fire. But because we have a proactive way of protecting, we're activating in some respects in advance of the exposure. And we're also able to minimize the amount of water. A lot of customers will also they'll put in a water backup that connects to their pool. So if you've got a pool or if you've got a tank or if you've got a lake or pond, if you have a drop in your main water source, it'll automatically pull off of that water as well. So we've got a number of redundant pieces assembled in the mechanical elements of the system for just turning on the system and protecting. On top of that, we're redundant in our communication set as well. So we start with Wi-Fi communications. We roll over to cellular, and if cellular goes out, we have satellite communications. But we're communicating with your system in the first two forms every 60 seconds. So we have a bi-directional flow of data to your home every 60 seconds, and we're collecting information from your home, and we're sending information that we are monitoring for wildfires in the area down to your home.
I'm curious, how much time have you spent looking at gels, to complement water or in lieu of water?
Yeah, a lot actually. And we use a foam. We use a Class A biodegradable foam in the system. There's about 20 different foams that have been approved by the U.S. Forest Service. And any one of those can be integrated into our system. And it's the same stuff that firefighters carry on their trucks. You just don't need a firefighter to be there. So it's a Class A foam, and what it does is it makes water wetter, so you're able to do more with less water. It more quickly hydrates the recipient fuels on and around the structure, whether it be patio furniture or a dormer, on your home or the leaves in the gutter. And so you're able to more quickly hydrate those in advance of the ember exposure.
And then on the, I have a bunch of business questions, but on the software side, should I, so as I was listening, should I have takeaway that if you have to evacuate or if you just you default to the system to make the decision, it's factoring proximity, wind, as to when they make a decision to, give you the 10-minute notice that it's going to go live?
That's right. Yeah, we've built a proprietary algorithm that, generally speaking, factors in those environmental variables, distance from your home, how hard the wind's blowing, dryness of fuels, readiness of spread, and the Frontline app serves as like a wildfire guide. So it's not just there to inform you that your system is running, but it's very human in nature as well. We don't want folks to make a trade-off on protecting their home and protecting their family. We want them to get out of harm's way, and also have Frontline protect their home. So while firefighters are protecting on are focused on saving your life, Frontline's focused on saving your home. And we do that through both the hardware as well as the software. In the Frontline app, there's ways of we have lists to prepare your home in advance of fire. We have notifications and alerts that let you know what to do when there is a fire. We have ways of tracking your loved ones. So the anxiety of the fire event, chances are you're not going to be at home the same time your wife when fire might hit the home. Your kids could be at school. And just having everyone separated causes a lot of anxiety. The Frontline app is a tool to help bridge that.
Reminding me, we got to put air tags on the dog's collars.
You got to know where the dog is too. That's a biggie. Yeah.
right. Hey, so a bunch of business related questions. Would love your, see with your CEO hat on, would love your perspective of how it if and how you've engaged insurance companies to get them to lower premiums if someone is going to deploy Frontline.
Yeah. So we've had successes prior to the LA fire. We had successes in since 2018 in fires, whether it be, in the Rocky Mountains or in California, but never at the scale, right, as the LA fire. We had 59 homes that were protected, you're able to see them operating. That's a critical component to all of this because the policy losses, the portfolio losses that insurers had during the wildfire or as a result of the wildfires in LA, they were left looking at, okay, how do we safely write to this market? And it doesn't matter if it's LA, it could be the Bay Area, it could be the Pacific Northwest, it could be anywhere in the Rocky Mountains, it could be Texas. There's actually more fires on the East Coast than there are in the West, just from a quantity perspective. They tend to be bigger in the Western US. But Atlantic City burned around the turn of the last century. So, there's going to be a huge number of fires that are going to affect the Eastern Seaboard. Now, looking at the post-fire data, it wasn't just the structures that carried the fires. You had burning vehicles, you had burning trash cans, you had burning kids' toys, you had burning umbrellas and patio furniture that the post-fire analyses, whether it be in LA or in Lahaina, they identified these as being transmitters of the fire throughout the community. So insurers are having to get smart. They can't just rely on what they're told as to what's going to be protective for their policy. And the really smart insurers are ahead of it. We're having close conversations, and we're very close to being able to include an insurance policy, with the Frontline system. Can't announce it yet, but we are getting there. And that is going to be integral for private markets to really adapt and adapt with some speed and intelligence to a changing climate. I mean, you have a $1 billion cost weather event happening once every 2 weeks now, Christian. In the 1980s, it was once every 16 weeks. Change is real. Wildfire risk is very real. The smart insurers, the smart mortgage companies, are paying attention to what's being protective. That was the real delta. I think what came out of the LA fires is it was on global TV, global television, and everyone saw it for themselves. It wasn't like they had to go read a white paper. They saw for themselves. Home after home in one of the largest cities in the world burning down.
And just to round out your experience, I know you can't say who, but just rounding out your experience that you've had with the insurers, is it safe to say that they're just looking for validation that the solution is going to work before they're going to get behind it?
I think they have the validation. Now it's working. Now it's working out the underwriting pieces. I think in part it's working out the other noise. For years folks have been told what to do to protect themselves against fire. It started with defensible space, Now the current talk track is around home hardening, but the reality is active defense really matters. Water actually has an impact on whether or not a fire burns something. And historically, water has been delivered by firefighters. However, you can't scale the number of firefighters that are needed to protect every single home that's simultaneously exposed during a wind-driven ember storm. And so just like interior fire sprinkler systems like we have in this room, you could provide automated fire protection without the need for a firefighter to be in every single room in every single building in America. It's a different mode of action as far as activating the system. But similarly, in context, it's very similar. You got to automate, and insurers are realizing that that is a critical component to the survivability of really their portfolio. And I think with what we are really the trajectory that we're on, Christian, it could, if you don't adapt, this looks like 2008. You could have dead standing companies that are generational companies that have been embedded in the marketplace for many, many years that are just not aware of their risk. I'll give you another example. There was a big chunk of the Palisades that wasn't even in the wildland urban interface. So, historically, even though 90% of structures are igniting from embers, less than 1% of our community wildfire protection plans, the acronym is a CWPP, which defines where the wildfire exposed areas of your community are. Less than 1% of those CWPPs have an ember analysis included in them. And so, from a systemic risk perspective, you've had the public fire service defining where the risk is, or you have local municipalities, jurisdictions that are defining where the risk is. They've historically defined it as this wall of flames coming out of the forest, even though it isn't a wall of flames, it's embers, right? And so when you accurately account for the embers, your wildfire exposed area in your community increases dramatically. But if you don't account for it initially upfront, then you're not prepared for the wildfire that is inevitably going to come, right? It's not if there's going to be a fire that affects your home, your business, your community. It is when. And that is just botany. And to not identify exactly where the threat is, the exposure is, then your evacuation routes are not set up correctly. You're not applying tools correctly. Your suppression efforts, you're not going to have the correct density. So you're systemically set up for failure. Now, that is a public setup, but your private markets are relying on the performance of that, of the public markets. And so you have what, economists would historically refer to as a moral hazard. And the private markets, need to correct that, and they need to do so as quickly as possible. And that's going to be a combination of smart underwriting, combined with smart protection, which is frontline.
Super impressed with what you built. Would love to know what the progression looked like leading up to Frontline after Michigan.
So after Michigan, I grew up in New Jersey. I grew up on the Jersey Shore.
Where, which town?
Rumson, New Jersey.
I did high school in Woodbridge, so yeah. I mean, mind you, it was about an hour drive, but yeah, we would go to Wildwood, Seaside, and what was north of Seaside?
Point Pleasant.
Yes, on a regular basis.
Yes.
Mind you, we
Yeah.
couldn't really do much of anything because we're all, 16, 17 at the time, but it was still a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. They got great food.
Yes.
So grew up there, went to school in Ann Arbor. After that, moved out to Jackson Hole.
Oh.
And so I was here in Jackson Hole for New Year's 2000. And I started up a company called Firewise Landscapes, which was doing applied ecology, landscape ecology, and forestry work. Met a girl, got married, raised a family.
Awesome.
Yeah, I've had a great life in Jackson. And you know, it was really you know, the arc of that journey that led me to Frontline.
And so you got entrepreneur in the DNA. I love it. That's great. As you reflect back on key lessons over the last quarter of a century, what are the things that stand out the most?
Have faith, trust it. You know, we had to, being a landscape ecologist, not your traditional path to running a tech company. You know, we had to understand fire at a cellular level. And when you look at it at that sort of unit basis, you know, it's a point to set to point type analysis. And you know, nothing in nature happens one time. You see processes in nature that replicate itself. So by having the opportunity to study natural systems in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and other places throughout the West, it was an indicator of you know, the presence of those same processes elsewhere. I try to figure out a million ways, Christian, that we were wrong, and that this was not the right approach. And that critical analysis, I think, was a key component to just understanding that this is the right approach. You know, constantly figuring out a reason why you're wrong, while on one hand, it can make you know, a little bit goofy. On the other, it's a great way to sharpen the approach to what ultimately becomes a really successful, scalable company.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, there's tremendous value in planning. I also think at some point, though, and I don't get any credit for coming up with this, but I mean, paralysis by analysis is real. And so at some point, having faith that you've done your homework, the opportunity is real, go for it, is a great approach. I'm curious, though, if you had opportunities to do anything different, what would that conversation look like with your younger self?
You know, I would add one other thing. You know, part of the reason that the analysis needed to be as thorough as it was is because the investor world has historically been, you know, sort of a follower type approach.
Yeah.
You'll have investors that are, they're smart, and they will nonetheless say, come up with all the reasons why it doesn't make sense. And then you'll have investors that are smart, they have range. They've seen how it can make sense. They see the key indicators, and they'll move forward with that. And being able to combine the economics, you know, with the analysis in the go-to-market strategy, you know, when you find that good partnership, it resonates that much more. So, sorry, I missed your question. You asked another follow-up
Yeah,
to it.
I mean, I well, I, and I'll re-ask in a moment, but I think your observation is spot on. I'm sure, most people, and I'd say whether that happens at a corporate governance level or at an investor level, or middle of the road, and it takes someone who's able to separate the signal from the noise in making a decision of whether or not a founder has identified a meaningful solution that can scale. And yes, they agree. My experience has been they seem to be in the minority, or at least finding them can be difficult depending on what solution you're solving. The question, oh, so yeah, so hear you loud and clear on having faith, but would love to know if there's anything you would tell your younger self to do different if you had the opportunity.
No, I don't. I wouldn't change a thing. I mean, challenges happen for a reason. You are who you are because everything it took to get to this point. I'm a 50-year-old founder, and I've had a lot of life experience. I wouldn't trade it for the world, right? Like getting to this point, having the opportunity that we have in front of us now, it's the product of the path that I took, I took with my wife and getting here, my family. So no, I mean, I think the only thing I would say is just keep the faith, man. It's like it's literally that simple. Trust your heart, work your butt off, put incredible people around you. Like the team that I've been able to assemble at Frontline is amazing. It is what makes Frontline.
Excellent. On that note, we'd love to give you an opportunity to recognize or give a shout out to anyone personally or professionally who's had a meaningful impact on you over the years.
Well, I mean, first and foremost, my wife, she has lived it with me. Never an easy path to go start up a new category and then go participate in that category. It takes a lot of long hours. Jenny gets it, and I appreciate that immensely. I think from a from an academic perspective, the I had some professors back in Michigan, in the landscape, architecture and applied ecology program that were excellent. Bob Greasy was a person who based in Ann Arbor, big part of the LA program there. And he was doing controlled burns in neighborhoods in Ann Arbor, Michigan, which raised an eyebrow, but really underlined the importance of fire as a way to restore our plant communities. I would say there's a number of professors there. They're my folks. I grew up in a small business. My parents were pharmacists in New Jersey. My mom and dad worked really hard, long hours, and they gave me a, they painted the picture of what it looked like to work hard and what you had to do to succeed.
Family and teachers, I love it. That's great. Well, Harry, genuinely appreciate your time. Appreciate you sharing with the audience. Thank you. If there's anyone who'd like to get a hold of you, learn more, whether, customer or investor, how can they find you?
Go to our website. It's frontlinewildfire.com. There's a lot of information on Frontline. There's a way to get a hold of me. You can hit me up on LinkedIn as well.
Awesome. Great stuff. And again, Harry Statter, founder, CEO of Frontline Wildfire Defense. Harry, thank you. It was great.
Thanks, Christian.
Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com/podcast-guest. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.